And now a story that is hard to tell and was unbearable to read. 12-year-old Rory Stanton of New York died from sepsis, a blood infection, 3 days after he was sent home from the emergency room with the diagnosis of a stomach bug and dehydration. Now, he first got sick after a cut from a fall in his school gym. It's likely where bacteria entered his body. But then the New York Times reports on signs missed, despite policies, including an initiative in New York to aggressively screen for sepsis. Now, this story has drawn more than 1,500 comments on the New York Times website, many from medical professionals worried that parents are going to now overreact to every scrape that their kids get this summer. Jim Dwyer wrote the story. So, Jim, help us tell it. Rory's parents took him to his pediatrician when he began to get sick. He had a fever, 102 degrees, a fast heart rate, fast breathing. He was throwing up. His skin became blotchy and mottled. When touched, the pediatrician sent him to the hospital ER to get fluids. There's a screening tool there that's supposed to screen for sepsis. Tell us more.
New York City has a consortium of hospitals that are all involved in a Stop Sepsis program, and they have a screening tool that's used in the emergency rooms. There's some debate now as to whether it's really applicable to children, but it basically is meant to look at everybody's vital signs when they come in and some other factors. And if you have 3 out of these 8 factors, you're considered a possible sepsis patient. And so then they do additional tests. In Rory's case, when he arrived at the emergency room, he did not have 3 of those symptoms. He was screened for sepsis. He had 2 because his temperature had dropped a little bit as he was traveling from his private pediatrician's office to the emergency room. But he was breathing quickly and had a very rapid heart rate. The doctor came in and examined him, her assessment, the second doctor's assessment, was that he needed fluids and needed some nausea medicine and Tylenol for his fever. Another thing they did while he was in the emergency room was draw bloods. And in Rory's case, they showed significant signs of a bacterial infection, according to infectious disease doctors that I spoke with.
Yeah, in fact, you spoke to one who said the rates that he was producing white blood cells were very abnormal and would suggest a serious bacterial infection. But what happened to the lab results? When did they come into the picture?
Well, these differential lab results apparently didn't come in until about 3 hours after they had left. For reasons we don't yet understand, neither the lab nor the treating doctor nor any follow-up doctor or nurse or anyone contacted the Stauntons and said, hey, this kid looks like he's got a bacterial infection. Bring him back here.
And they didn't call his pediatrician either. And so when the family is now calling the pediatrician as Rory's getting worse, he can't be touched. The slightest touch makes him scream. He's starting to turn blue. But they're calling the pediatrician, who later tells you she never heard the test results either.
Right. And the family called a number of times as Rory was getting sicker through the day. And eventually his skin was starting to darken in various places, and he was extremely weak. And they brought him back on the advice of their pediatrician to the emergency room,
where he begins to die. I mean, there's no other way to say it.
He was going into organ failure, an avalanche of things going wrong. They had him in the intensive care unit for a couple of days, but there was really nothing that could be done, or nothing that they were able to do at that time anyway.
Terrible story.
It's a very, very tough story for everyone involved, certainly anyone who knew the boy, as I did. Fleetingly, I would say. His uncle happens to be a friend of mine, and just by chance, I met him last summer for a couple of days. And he was very into human rights and international politics. And, of course, you know, he's also a goofy 12-year-old. He was flying at age 12. He had taken lessons from a flight school that allowed kids that young to get behind the stick.
I mean, it would be, of course, it wouldn't matter if he was that kind of an outsized 12-year-old. It's still a terrible, terrible story. But what is it? What else is it a story about?
I think really what it is do people have the information they need to make good decisions when they're in an emergency room setting, when there's a lot of things going on? A nurse practitioner who works at one of the city hospitals in Queens got in touch with me and told me that in her hospital, which serves mainly poor and indigent people, if they get an abnormal blood result, they will actually contact the New York Police Department and ask them to get a car to have a child come back to the emergency room if the family doesn't have a telephone. Whatever system New York University Medical Center has, they haven't explained it. And I think it's worth knowing about what they do when they get irregular blood results after somebody's left.
Well, you know, that's what a lot of people commented after, you know, your article appeared. You know, what's going to happen now? Why didn't they have that system? Here's somebody from Maryland. As a physician assistant, I'm confused. When a patient has seriously high bands, this is what you were talking about, the blood results, the lab calls back to let someone know if they're not there, if they've gone off shift. A working provider follows up with the patient immediately. There's that. But then, on the other hand, you know, here's a comment from Paul in New York City. What a tragic story, made worse by a public lynching on the front page of the New York Times. You know, now every person who reads this and develops a fever is going to think they're dying. Another person writes, I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of patients just like this every month.
Other doctors who have reacted to those comments that this happens all the time, they say, wait a minute, you send home kids with fevers, high heart rates, that's called tachycardia, and this extraordinarily high rate of bands, this kind of white blood cell. You send them home all the time? They seem to be incredulous about that.
We're going to link our listeners to the comments and your responses to a lot of them at hearnow.org. And you take a tough stance here. There's somebody who writes about, you know, again, that notion that healthcare is going to collapse because patients with 102 temperatures but no real problems are going to start flooding hospitals.
I have a great deal of empathy for people who work in emergency rooms and a great deal of admiration for what they're up against. What I don't think is tolerable is the notion that talking about this is a lynching or is going to result in a catastrophic event in our healthcare system where people who aren't sick are going to be demanding to be taken care of. If people aren't sick, send them home. But don't send them home if you don't know that they're not sick.
And you're right. I mentioned the person who wrote and said, you know, called this a public lynching. You wrote back and said, let me suggest another happier result. Relevant lab results will be used in a timely way to treat patients.
I've gotten a lot of email from medical organizations saying that they're taking this case very seriously as something that they need to keep in mind as they develop their own tactics. You know, somebody from Baylor Hospital got in touch with me and was telling me about, you know, their sepsis screening program. Anybody who has a heart rate above a certain level, depending upon their age, it's a simple one strike, you might have sepsis type of outlook. And they claim they've had a big reduction in mortality as a result of using that.
Jim Dwyer of the New York Times, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.